KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland in the Temescal neighborhood.
Jack London Square.
Fruitvale.
Adams Point.
Grand Lake neighborhood.
Maxwell Park.
Coming up, workers on one of the largest fruit farms in the country voted to leave the United Farm Workers Union, but the union claims there was meddling in the election.
They said that we got paid to protest against the union, and that's not true. I'm not part of that. I don't work like that. I don't do those things.
Then the history behind United Farm Workers, the rise of the union founded by Cesar Chavez, and its fall, as one historian describes it.
This union that achieved this kind of remarkable success for the poorest workers in the state begins to see itself as a victim.
The shrinking UFW. Stay tuned. Cross Currents is coming up. Today we're going to talk about labor, particularly farm work. Workers in one of the country's biggest fruit-growing companies have officially ousted their union, the UFW, United Farm Workers, founded by Cesar Chavez. That fruit grower is called Garawan Farming, and it employs almost 5,000 workers over 70 farms across the Central Valley. Many, if not most, of those workers are undocumented immigrants from Latin America, and unions can provide legal protections in working situations where exploitation is often an issue. But the farm workers voted against unionizing back in 2013, and subsequently the UFW disputed that election. They said it was unlawfully influenced by the employer's fear-mongering and anti-union campaign. So after 5 years of dueling lawsuits, the Agriculture Labor Relations Board, that's the court for farm labor disputes, it finally ruled to uphold the results of the election. KALW's economy reporter Liza Veal wanted to know why so many workers would vote against unionizing, especially in a place where the farm worker movement has such a strong legacy. For that, she takes us to Fresno.
Fresno County has been a hub for immigrant workers since the 1930s, and while there's still not much of a middle class there, by some measurements, conditions for immigrants are better than they once were. Farm workers used to be excluded from the labor protections that were guaranteed to most other workers. They were denied things like minimum wage, job security, and legal collective bargaining. That's changed, in large part, thanks to Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Worker Movement. But if you ask Sylvia Lopez, she'll say these days, the UFW isn't improving the livelihoods of farm workers in the Central Valley. She was a leader in the long, long battle to kick the UFW off Garawan Farming.
Because I think being a union, giving your money away is being slaves.
Lopez picks fruit for Garawan Farming, and she helps out at her daughter's tortilla shop. She kept offering to warm one up for me. And she's also president of a controversial advocacy group called Pick Justice, which was formed specifically to help Garawan workers fight the UFW. And though they say Pick Justice is a grassroots, farmworker-led group, it was founded by a young political consultant named Jesse Rojas.
I didn't have the honor of working in the fields, but my parents did.
Rojas says the union has done a bad job of representing workers.
It's like a product, right? If these tortillas are not good, nobody's going to buy them. They're really good, so she's always sold out. But when something doesn't work, then people don't want it.
Here's the quick background you need to understand the vote to oust or decertify the UFW. The union actually first came to Garawan over 25 years ago. And back then, the workers voted to unionize. And what typically happens next is the union gets the employer to agree to a contract. You know, here are the wages, here are the benefits, here are the conditions. That never happened. Rojas has always said that the union just disappeared.
They have never been able to prove that to send a telegram, a smoke signal, a text message, or a phone call to reach the company to try to bargain in good faith, ever. So they abandoned the workers.
The truth is, the union and the company were embroiled in legal battles that escalated to the state Supreme Court. The UFW made several contract proposals that were refused. In 2013, the court finally forced the company to agree to a contract negotiated by third-party mediators. But it is true that from the perspective of workers, the UFW was not much of a presence for years. The way Lopez says she experienced it, they just showed up saying, we're ready to start collecting union dues.
They were notifying us. They didn't ask us. They tried to silence us. They tried to force us to make a contract.
So that's when PIC Justice formed in order to fight back against the union. We're going to hear from the other side, but I want to say two more things about the larger context of this fight. First, Rojas says he believes Latin American immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants like him, tend to be suspicious of unions.
So the very same unions and things that oppress 99% of my family who still lives in Colima, Mexico, the unions, the government abuse, it's the same thing that we see here in California now.
He and Sylvia Lopez say most workers aren't thinking of Cesar Chavez and the farm worker movement. They're just thinking of authorities who want to squeeze them for dues or worse, jeopardize their status in this country. Lopez claims she didn't have to convince people. They already got it.
Yeah, because they came from Mexico. They were running from that.
But this leads us to the other thing to know. Rojas and Lopez weren't fighting the UFW single-handedly. As soon as the owner of Garawan Farming caught whiff of the union's return, he started waging a campaign to win workers over to his side. Among other things, he gave everyone a raise and more bathroom breaks.
Our relationship with the company or the owners, it was great. You know, they go and visit us to the field. So I think that's a very good opportunity to talk to them if you have a problem at your work.
But because Lopez has always allied herself with the employer's effort to fend off the union, she was accused of being paid by him to organize, which is illegal.
And that's not truth. I'm not part of that. I don't work like that. I don't do those things.
Other workers have a very different story. According to some of them, the no vote wasn't about distrust for the union. It was about fear of retaliation from the employer. I met three supporters of the UFW as they got off work at a peach and nectarine orchard. The sun was going down, and we stood under the trees by the side of the road, shifting our weight to stay warm. It was pruning season, so these workers spend their days up on ladders with their arms over their heads. The first they heard about the union was from the company, warning that the union wanted to take 3% of their paycheck for dues. Aurelio Landa says he was turned off at first.
Because I've never worked with a union, and they're telling us the union's going to steal our money.
But then an organizer from the UFW convinced him that the contract that was already negotiated by the court-mandated mediators in 2013 was going to get workers a better deal than they were getting.
When I started to look at the benefits I was going to see through the union, they offered paid holidays and all of that. So that was the idea.
Agustin Garcia adds,
they offered salary increase, seniority, a grievance process, and they negotiated a good medical plan for the workers.
They say that when they started showing support for the union, the company began targeting them. They say they were both suspended for fabricated reasons.
They looked for any pretext, one way or another, to undermine the union by disciplining the workers that supported them.
Garcia says workers know about Garawan's history of retaliation. It is true that the company fired workers for supporting the union 25 years ago. He says they don't want to jeopardize what is a pretty good job for the industry, but he was still motivated.
More than anything, it's the pressure of living with this job. I have a family. I have three girls who go to school. I'm the only one supporting the family.
I met Garcia's three young daughters later that evening when he invited me to his house in downtown Fresno. The girls stared at me in polite silence, but immediately started climbing all over each other and falling off the couch as soon as we went back to talking. Here is what Garcia emphasized.
The thing about working here is you have to put up with the pressure, and the money isn't enough in any case.
He says there's nothing he likes about his job. He doesn't know if he'll be able to move into a house with more than one bedroom for all three of his girls. He doesn't know how he'll retire. He wants more from his employer. And the enemy of his enemy, that's the union. So that's where his allegiance lies. Eventually, Rojas, Lopez, and the PIC Justice group collected enough signatures to force a new election. That took place in 2013. But before the votes were counted, the UFW filed another suit with the California Agricultural Labor Relations Board, saying there was foul play in the process. So the votes were impounded, and no one knew the outcome for 4 years until the lawsuit was settled. Here's Armando Elenes, the secretary treasurer of the UFW.
They found that signatures were forgeries.
That's right. The ALRB did find evidence of foul play.
But yet, the ALRB chose to ignore that.
Finally, last November, the ALRB ruled that even though there had been unlawful activity, the results of the election would stand. Their reasoning? The vote tally. Out of the almost 1,300 Garawan employees, only 197 voted to keep the UFW. So even though there was evidence to back up what Garcia and Landa claimed to me, the ALRB decided the vote was too much of a landslide for it to be explained simply by a dirty campaign. But Elena still doesn't buy it.
The ALRB was unwilling to confront the political power that this company was gonna leverage and use.
In its ruling, the ALRB confirmed that Sylvia Lopez used company time to campaign, which is illegal. But no one was able to turn up evidence that Rojas's group, Pick Justice, was funded by the employer.
You know, I don't think we probably did enough in terms of figuring out where their funding was coming from. And then they also had no obligation to disclose where their funding is coming from.
Pick Justice is not required to publicly file taxes. It is required to file what's called a statement of information, which would tell us something about cash flow. But they haven't filed one, which is atypical, and they've paid a penalty for it. The two lawyers associated with Pick Justice, Anthony Raimondo and Richard Aaron, both represent big agribusinesses in the Central Valley, meaning Pick Justice's lawyers typically work on behalf of employers at companies like Garawan. But it's hard, if not impossible, to trace Pick Justice's money directly back to the owners of Garawan Farming.
Hi, I'm hoping to speak with Richard Aaron.
Both the owner of Garawan Farming and the lawyers associated with Pick Justice refused to take my calls or respond to my emails.
Would you like his voicemail?
I already left a voicemail.
Okay. Would you like to speak with the secretary?
Nope, I'll just try back again later.
Regardless of who financed what, Elenes admits the UFW was not at all prepared to take on the fight against them.
I don't think we really had enough of an idea that how big it was going to be. It was kind of like a race against the clock, and the clock ran out on us.
It's hard to tell what factors had the most sway over the outcome of the election. Was it Garawan's tactics, Jesse Rojas's messaging, the UFW's failure to maintain their credibility among farm workers? Some say it's the general climate of hostility toward undocumented immigrants. And could the UFW have overcome all of that if they'd put more resources into organizing?
I think there's definitely some lessons learned on the worker side. If we would had been able to convince them, you know, there was a possibility of changing their conditions, but we just didn't have the amount of staff that would need to be on all those different locations.
Not investing in organizing means that for a lot of these workers, the only information that they got came from the other side. They never even heard the union's case. Elenes explains that the UFW has other responsibilities besides organizing. For example, they draft and lobby for legislation.
We're very proud of, obviously, the fight that we did to improve the heat standards,
which better protects workers in California from the dangers of working during extreme temperatures.
Overtime legislation that we got passed.
And that closes loopholes at the federal level that allow employers to deny workers overtime pay in some cases.
And then, of course, you know, we still have our longstanding goal of some type of immigration reform for farm workers.
But Elena says in the last few years, they've shifted more resources over to their organizing and unionizing efforts.
It's definitely more of a priority. Some of the legislative stuff is, I mean, we're going to do that regardless, but we're really focused on growing the organization and continuing to improve conditions in the fields.
So that the next time the UFW faces pushback from an employer, it has the support to win. That takes organizing, which is expensive and labor-intensive. But recently, some unions, like those representing Bay Area hospitality workers and teachers, have recommitted to that work and won. But what happened at Garawan should also serve as a lesson for workers and unions. Don't bring a knife to a gunfight. In Fresno, I'm Liza Veal for Crosscurrents. Thank you.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We just heard how workers at Garawan Farming voted to decertify the UFW. And that's just part of the story of why the union has been shrinking for decades. Matter of fact, most unions have been shrinking since the 80s. But the details of the UFW's rise and fall are mostly unknown. The Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author Miriam Powell spent hundreds of hours interviewing former UFW members, and she wrote a book called The Union of Their Dreams, Power, Hope, and Struggle in Cesar Chavez's Farm Worker Movement. She also wrote the very first biography of Cesar Chavez. KALW's economy reporter Liza Veal has Powell's account of the story.
When Miriam Powell first moved to California to work at the LA Times in 2000, she got curious about the dismal working conditions on farms. She started asking what had happened to the union famous for leading the farm worker movement in the 60s and 70s.
Everyone I spoke to who was really deeply involved with farm workers was like, the UFW doesn't do anything anymore for farm workers.
She found that the story of how that got to be was largely unknown, even to some of the family members of the people involved.
The kids of a lot of these people talked to me and said, like, thank you for doing this because my parents would never talk about what happened.
They knew about the rise of the UFW, but its fall was more mysterious, in part because, according to Powell, Cesar Chavez had become almost a religious figure. So to many people, his union was beyond criticism. But Powell wanted to give him his proper due, which meant an unflinching record of his life.
I actually became convinced by some historian friends that, you know, that I mean, nobody knew who he was. He'd been reduced to this really sort of one-dimensional character, and he's the face on the postage stamp and, you know, the name on the schools and the streets. But I ultimately decided that it really detracted from his rightful place in history.
Like all California kids, I got the day off school on Cesar Chavez Day. Posters of the grape boycott and Chavez's face were all over my classrooms. I learned how farm work hadn't been included in the national labor laws that gave other workers minimum wage, unemployment insurance, workers' comp, and everything else. I learned how people thought farm workers couldn't be unionized because they didn't have citizenship, they didn't speak English, and how the UFW proved everyone wrong. But from its height to the present day, a lot has happened.
So this union that made its, you know, that achieved this kind of remarkable success for the poorest workers in the state by, you know, si se puede, by not accepting that they couldn't do things and by instilling in people this belief that collective action could accomplish things, begins to see itself as a victim.
That union has become the organization that was recently voted off one of its largest farms by workers. How? Powell puts the big turning point at 1975. Cesar Chavez had been leading the growing movement for a decade. They'd won the very first farm worker strikes and contracts. They'd involved the whole country in boycotts. They created protections for immigrants. And Chavez was the commander-in-chief.
He used to say that, you know, his favorite role was to be the nonviolent Viet Cong. And, you know, to do guerrilla warfare. And that was what he loved. And he loved picking those fights.
Civil disobedience, lawsuits, strikes.
All of that he loved.
Then, in 1975, they won what seemed like a big victory. The UFW successfully pushed for the creation of the Agricultural Labor Relations Board, like the industry's own version of the National Labor Relations Board, which farm workers had always been excluded from. The ALRB would legally recognize unions and settle disputes between employers and employees. Most significantly, it would suddenly make it much easier for farms to unionize.
It was huge. I mean, there's this huge pent-up demand.
But the problem, it changed everything about the role of Cesar Chavez's UFW.
So suddenly, this organization has to make the pivot from being a movement that is fighting all of these battles to being an organization that has a bureaucracy. And Cesar Chavez was really aware of this, and he had very mixed feelings from the start.
Because instead of commanding the union like a military, he'd have to delegate. Many of the UFW organizers on the ground knew they needed new structures, hopefully democratic ones, so the organization could grow and be able to run itself without constant command from the top. But when they tried to push for changes, they were seen as challenging Cesar Chavez's movement. A split in the leadership formed along this question.
Are we a movement or are we a union?
Are we authoritarian in structure, or can we have a leadership structure that's more dispersed and responsive from the bottom up?
And Chavez was like casting around for this way to preserve the union as he wants it to be and as a movement. And that requires kind of getting rid of people who are going to challenge that vision or be a problem for him.
Literally just kicking people out, anyone that showed any defiance. And this is the part of the story that has been difficult for UFW supporters to digest. The former leaders that Powell interviewed say around this time, Chavez started to really change. He'd become a hero to so many people, and yet he wasn't open to letting the organization grow bigger than him.
The thing escalates, and then ultimately part of the getting rid of people involves this meeting that becomes known as the Monday Night Massacre in April of 1977.
In which several high-ranking members were kicked out of the organization in a single community-wide meeting.
That meeting was the sort of the first and the most dramatic of the public purges.
After that, the union kind of shriveled into itself instead of expanding and growing.
They stopped organizing, and I think everyone would say that.
Because the more you organize, meaning engage and train members to take on more responsibility, the more problems those members can potentially cause the leadership, you know, with their ideas and sense of ownership. So Powell says Chavez made excuses not to organize.
He began to say, well, we can't organize. There's no point because it's a Republican administration, because this, because that. And so this union begins to see itself as a victim and begins to portray itself as a victim.
It's true that unions were under attack at this time. For example, a few years later, Reagan would fire over 11,000 government workers for striking, sending a chill through the labor movement. And it's true that Chavez's union wasn't the only one to begin shrinking. But the UFW is an example of the kinds of unions that fell the fastest. Instead of creating democratic structures to channel growing energy from the bottom, Chavez squashed it.
The union never was a democratic institution from the beginning, but it had he was able to maintain the sort of fiction that it was democratic for a long time. And then that began to unravel. It begins to unravel because of the workers and because there is leadership that is rising up in the fields through the union he sees as a real threat.
Powell says in particular, there are leaders that rise out of a big strike, the Imperial Valley Lettuce Strike in 1979. And the farm workers organized and won that strike themselves and got some of the best contracts in UFW history. But when leaders of the strike tried to run to be on the board of the UFW as rank-and-file farm worker leaders rather than UFW staff hand-picked by Chavez, Chavez fires them. There's a whole lawsuit over it, but in the end, even though the insurgent leaders win it, the UFW community shunned them.
They're pariahs. No one will hire them. They've been drummed out. And so this generation of farm workers who really could and should have been the leadership of the union, is gone.
Without a big staff capable of organizing new farms and keeping existing farms organized, workers lost touch with the UFW, just like the workers on Garawan farming. This was worsened by a lot of other obstacles, legal changes that made it even harder to unionize new places, changes to the agriculture industry that shut down farms that had been UFW strongholds in the past. But in Powell's mind, there's another piece to the story, which is the union took farm workers for granted.
And It was like, here we are, we're here to save you, and, you know, you should embrace us. If you're against us, you're either stupid or ignorant, you know, because you couldn't possibly not support us for any other reason, or you're bought by the grower. I mean, that's the usual thing. And so I think that that arrogance, which is shared by some other unions at some points too, you know, of sort of like, we're an obvious good and we don't have to tell you why, has really hurt them.
One of the reasons the story of the fall of the UFW is so unknown is people who support unions don't want to publicize their failures. Powell says in her reporting, she had to convince a lot of people to break a lifetime of silence.
Because they still viewed the UFW as the best hope for farm workers. So it was like, you know, we don't believe in the course that it was taking, that the union was taking and that Chavez was taking it in, but we don't want to say anything because we still think that it is the best way to help farm workers.
But Powell says people may be right that the UFW is the best way to help farm workers, but not if we don't push it to be better. Not talking about the failures of unions, that's giving up on them and the workers they exist for.
Miriam Powell is the author of The Union of Their Dreams, Power, Hope, and Struggle in Cesar Chavez's Farm Worker Movement. She spoke with KALW economy reporter Liza Veal. You can reach Liza at economy@kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.